This episode is brought to you with support from Fairplate. Tickets and information at fareplate.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, I'm Allie Kane. Welcome to In the Sauce, a podcast about building and growing consumer brands. When we launched a line of fresh sauces, I knew we were jumping into something crazy. Haven's Kitchen is a cooking school, cafe, and event space. A product that people buy in grocery stores is an entirely new business, and I had a lot to learn. So in my efforts to get myself educated, I started meeting everyone I know and respect who could advise me on production and distribution, sales and legal, PR, and social media. Then I started having those conversations here, as a podcast, so that other entrepreneurs can learn from them as well. This is the story of Haven's Kitchen Sauces, but it's also the story of every growing brand, because we're all in the sauce. Today, I'm speaking with Grace Lacona, Supplier Development Manager at UNFI Next, the program that UNFI created to curate and incubate emerging brands. Next is great for a brand like ours that isn't quite big enough for the big leagues just yet. UNFI is a giant, and if you're building a food brand that will be distributing nationally, you will be working with them at some point. The Next program was a brilliant innovation on their part to be able to work with smaller brands and help us grow. Welcome, Grace.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited you're here. We were talking before the show, the distribution piece of this whole CPG puzzle, I don't know if it's like just kind of opaque to me or if it's just opaque or what it is, but I'm psyched you're here because I feel like you speak like human and you can
thank you. Yeah. And I speak UNFI too, so that's kind of, you know,
you're like the bridge between UNFI and humans. Yeah. Which is very nice. I think, you know, if other founders out there are kind of like me, I think we get confused at the very beginning with the numbers and the margins. And then I think we get confused all the way through to what actually the relationship should be, what you expect from us and what we can expect from you. So I'm hoping that we can get to the bottom of that in the next 45 minutes. But before we get started, I always like to start the conversation off with a little bit about what you wanted to be when you grew up and what you were like as a kid, because I find that the links between those goals as a kid and what you end up doing are always kind of fun and fascinating. And chances are you didn't know you wanted to be a supplier development manager at UNFI.
No, I did not even know what a distributor was.
Right.
So there is no way that in the fourth grade or growing up, I would have any idea of that as a career.
So what did you want to do?
I don't necessarily know if there was a specific career path for me, but I did have an idol growing up and decided I wanted to be her. I was obsessed with Elle Woods.
Oh my gosh, that makes sense.
Yeah, and I'll talk a little bit about kind of my path to my current role, but there was some kind of Elle Woods moments during that.
Right. So you wanted to be a lawyer?
Yes and no. Uh-huh. I think what I loved about her was like everyone kind of underestimated her, and she was just so sure of herself. And you know, when she gets to Harvard Law and she's sitting in these classes and it's all about kind of logic and in how you interpret the world, she was just so spot on. And I was like, that's great. And I kind of had this idea that if you went to law school and Harvard Law specifically, you would have that kind of aha moment. And I thought being an attorney would be cool, and kind of always was interested in government classes growing up. And I was in, you know, student council and kind of all those things that kind of put me on a path to potentially maybe be an attorney one day.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately kind of ended up not doing that.
Yes. Did you go to law school?
No, I did not go to law school. I went into college giving up on kind of my Elle Woods journey for a second.
Uh-huh.
I thought, okay, well, if I'm not going to be Elle Woods, maybe I'll be a doctor.
Right.
Which is kind of a, you know, one of two things you
right.
in your life, I guess. Doctor, we're not going to be all woods. Go in and kind of have an aha moment, you know, later on in college that, you know, this isn't really necessarily for me either.
Right.
It's like, you know what, let me try and be out once again. So right. when I graduated, I was working as a paralegal in a law firm in New right. York City. And taking the LSAT, was really considering going to law school and took a step back and realized, you know, I'm not as passionate about this, and kind of envied people who were looked like they were in a field that they were very passionate about. So I kind of set out on a journey to kind of
find your passion.
Yeah.
Were you a food person growing up?
Yes and no. I think sometimes when people look back and foodies and look back and kind of think about, you know, your favorite recipe or your mm-hmm. favorite brand, you kind of associate that sometimes with growing up, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Do you have a favorite recipe of yours?
I do, but it's kind of gross. But it was like the first thing that I knew how to make, like, in bulk for a lot of people. And I, like, when I was like 10 or 11, I started making it and I'd have friends over. It was salmon, and I would make like mayonnaise and mustard. And I know you're making a fan. I'm telling you, it's kind of gross, but it does kind of evoke these feelings. And I would just like smear the mayonnaise and mustard on top of the salmon and put it under the broiler. And it would make this like crusty, I think I was always a sauce person. Yeah. So like it would make this like crusty thing, but also sort of saucy. I also love Lucky Charms. I was a Lucky Charms like brand, like they can do no wrong mm-hmm. for me.
And the combination sounds really
yes,
good.
Yes. Salmon, Lucky Charms. Yeah. It's, they're great together. But you were.
Yeah. So, I mean, kind of sometimes when you think about those moments growing up that kind of defined your journey as a foodie, I almost had kind of the most opposite experience of that mm-hmm. where, I grew up, I'm from Chicago originally. And, I think in the Midwest more so than kind of in, especially New York and on the other parts of the coast, you see that there's just a lot less access to foods that I identify now as a consumer. So mm-hmm. all natural and organic products. So I grew up with a lot of fast food
right.
and a lot of, I was a hot lunch kid.
Right.
So I have a very distinct memory of
yeah.
being in like the second grade and having this box.
Slop, yeah.
It was like an attempt at pizza,
right?
No tomato sauce, and what I'm now referring to as like almost like a pepperoni sprinkle.
Oh,
it was like
my gosh.
Not even real.
Yeah.
And then in middle school, another kind of memory I have was every Friday we would have a pizza or burger day,
uh-huh.
and it was Domino's, and
right.
McDonald's was the burgers.
Wow.
You know, and our school with you know touched a KFC.
Yeah.
So that was my kind of formative years and my exposure to food. And I always remember just not really kind of enjoying it as much.
Right.
And at home, kind of similar, a lot of fast food and kind of candy and all these things. And I just remember just not, you know, having the opportunity to take advantage of like almost like a kid's dream.
Right.
Like candy and not really kind of wanting it.
So that's interesting because in a way you did kind of take your Elle Woods-ness because, I mean, you're working for a massive distributor that its whole mission is getting natural foods to people, to everyone, right? I mean,
yeah.
Did you even know, how did you make those connections? So you were doing paralegal work and did you seek out something in food or did you seek out something in access or what was?
Yeah, I think I was kind of seeking out my own kind of journey inwards. So mm-hmm. I took a step back and thought about the things that I was so passionate about. And it wasn't at first very apparent to me that, mm-hmm. that food and particularly the grocery store,
right. you know,
consumer packaged goods, was like a real passion because I will go in a grocery store and I love grocery stores. Mm-hmm. They just have this way of making you feel.
Yeah.
You go down the aisle and you're like, this is so great. And I just love being able to like knowing where things are
yeah.
in my grocery store and then being surprised when I see a new brand. And I just assume because there are other people in that grocery store that they felt the same way
yeah.
I did. And it was not true.
No.
And so I didn't even think of that as being a passion. And I kind of you know started thinking about and talking to people and they didn't share that.
Right.
and that's what's kind of nice about a passion too is sometimes you do overlook it.
Yeah.
You are just so.
It's just such a part of you.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally.
So I basically, you know, had that moment, made that recognition, and started talking to people in this industry.
And then how did you hear that there was a job at UNFI?
This was the first time also in my life that I'd ever networked.
Right.
And kind of even before I got this job, I knew that this was a company I wanted to be in for, because I basically got the opportunity to sit down with someone from the company.
Right.
And prior to that, kind of doing all the research and looking into it, I was like, this is the coolest.
No, it's, I mean, I'm a grocery store person too. And by the way, there actually is research that like more millennials are grocery store people.
Oh, that's awesome.
Older millennials tend not to be, but younger millennials actually really enjoy the market experience and find it relaxing and creative. And I think somehow that pressure of like, I have to go home and make dinner is not a part of their experience. So you are not alone, turns out. But if I had known that this was possible, I mean, it was when I interviewed Charlotte and Courtney from Fresh Direct and Food Kick, you know, we were talking about how, if you had known that this was a job that you get to be helpful in getting really cool things on the shelf and like getting, tasting new products before they come out and like being a part of that whole infrastructure, like we just, you don't think about it as a consumer. You don't know that there are all these steps and systems going on behind the scenes. Why would you? But once you know it, if you're into it, it's like kind of a dream job.
Yeah.
So did you start at Next or did you start at the bigger UNFI?
Yeah. So I started at Next, had a couple of amazing conversations with people at UNFI and always kind of kept in the back of my head. And I had at that point realized that I just, you know, wasn't going to go down the law path. And so people would say, well, you know, what are your other backups if you know, nothing mm-hmm. comes from this? And I was like, nope.
No backup.
No backup.
That's how I am about the sauce. What are you going to do if it doesn't work? Nope.
It's like, you know, I felt like this was my path. And so this opportunity kind of, you know, someone reached out and said, hey, you know, here's this job.
And how would you describe the job? Like, what is the, I mean, I was even looking on your LinkedIn. I'm like supplier relationship development. Yeah, I don't know, something like what is the, how would you exactly describe the job?
Yeah, every day is very different. But if I had to describe the job, I would say that it's kind of like dating multiple people at the same time. So I work primarily with emerging brands, new to UNFI. So that's the number one criteria when you're looking at this program, is that you've never worked with UNFI before.
Right.
And when you kind of break that down, there's brands that are in three different phases, and these are my dating life right now,
right,
in terms of
like your first dates,
exactly,
your like brunch dates,
yeah,
and then your sleepovers,
exactly, yeah, you have your first dates and that's me going out and kind of seeing what's available, and
right,
and you know, you make a connection and you then move towards, you know, deciding, hey, let's make a partnership here, let's let's sign some legal paperwork and let's start working together. And then it's about developing these brands.
Right.
You know, making, you know,
so celebrate. We're in phase, we're steadily dating now.
Yes. I'm
because
excited.
We just got, we just partnered, which is very exciting. I tried to connect a while ago. I think I called you crying at some point. Yeah. Cause it's hard. It's hard not, you know, it's confusing and the numbers and the margins and you don't know who to trust and what to do. So you just very early on were someone that I felt very comfortable with, which was a good sign when you're first dating someone.
Oh, well, thank you.
So before we take a break, can you also just tell me a little bit more about how did UNFI get the idea and how did they put in place this Next program, and just a little bit more background on the Next program and how it's very different? I mean, starting off with how many points of distribution you have to be in a DC. And I will break that down because I realize as I'm saying that, I sound like,
I think you said DC.
I did say DC. Okay. So from my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you want to be in a UNFI distribution center, that's what DC stands for, you need to have 30 points of distribution, meaning 30 doors, basically, that are ordering your product, 30 stores that want your product. If you are under that, then you don't really get space in the warehouse, like in the DC. If you are a UNFI Next product, that number isn't 30, it's 7. Is that correct-ish?
Yes, yes and no. So our distribution centers all have movement requirements. So
how many are there? First
all together, we have 33.
There are 33 distribution centers across the country.
Yes.
And they all have to move product because product can't just sit there and not move because that would be taking up space where other products could be. So because of that...
Yeah, because of that, basically, we've set these numbers out there. And it depends on what space you're in the warehouse. So if you're an ambient, you know, we want to see you moving 5 cases a week per SKU, per distribution center. If you're in chill, a little higher of a real estate price tag, it's 7 cases per week. And then when you're in the frozen space, you know, from an operation perspective, that's the hardest kind of to maintain. You're 10 cases per week.
Wow.
So we came up with 30 as kind of a good benchmark for you know, getting to those DC movement requirements, you know, seeing if a brand has legs, because around 30 locations is typically enough to kind of...
So 30 locations, if you're in 30 stores, then generally you'll move 7 cases per SKU per week?
Right.
Is that the idea? Mm-hmm. Okay. Got it. And someone like me, I'm not going to be moving that much at the beginning. Right. That's why they made Next.
Yeah. So in the beginning, if you aren't up to that 7 cases for your kind of section of the warehouse, we work with you on that. And we give you time to kind of get up there. We understand that, you know, when you start off, it can take some time.
And right.
So, you know, before we're, you know, it's not the second that a product hits the warehouse, the clock starts running. And if, you know, the second week after that, you don't have 7 cases, it's like, well,
thank you.
We had a great week.
Right. So is there like in the warehouse, is there like a little tag next to us that says like Next? Like, just don't move them out. Keep them here.
Yeah, no. I mean, the warehouses are pretty unified in general. So when it comes to making those decisions on products, though, that's where, you know, me as a supplier manager is involved.
Right. So if they're saying, listen, Grace, I know that you like these people, but they're not moving as quickly as we want them to, you can then kind of advocate on our behalf. And they set that system up so that you would?
Yeah, right. And so that, you know, I'm the final decision maker on that.
Got it.
And it's an opportunity then for you and I to sit down and say, hey, does this item make sense? And what's nice is we're looking at everything on an item per DC basis as opposed to a whole brand. So, you know, you can launch somewhere and have 2 items that are moving 30 cases a week. And if you just have 1 slower item, and, you know, we can look at turning it off and revisiting later on.
Right. And so... If you are, okay, well, let's take a little break. And then when we get back from the break, we'll get into the nitty gritty because I have so many questions. I'm so excited.
This episode is brought to you with support from Fairplate, a taste of Ireland in New York, taking place Saturday, March 9th at the Rag Trader. At Fairplate, you can sip and savor Irish whiskey, cheese, grass-fed beef, and more. Tickets and information at fareplate.com.
Hi, I'm back with Grace Lacona from UNFI Next, and we were just talking about the difference between UNFI Big Mama and UNFI Next. Tell me a little bit more. Tell me about sort of the genesis of the Next program, I guess, and how it can support little brands or soon to be big brands.
So the program, you know, if you look at UNFI, Big Mama UNFI. We're really set up for a national presence. So we historically work with larger brands and kind of saw an opportunity and really from the both on the customer end and the supplier end, an opportunity to be more accessible to smaller brands who were kind of in this space of innovation. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, customers, the retailers where you're going to buy these products, want to be able to offer their consumers, like you and I, something trendy and innovative. And so that's kind of how we looked at kind of creating this program, is an ability to kind of a service to the supplier community, giving you kind of the opportunity to grow with us as opposed to the traditional route, which is, okay, hey, now that you're in 400 locations across the country, it's time to work for you.
No, it's so smart. It's so smart. And so you basically go out and find new brands. Is that a lot of what you do?
Yeah, I'd say that's
that's
third of my
fun.
Time.
So how do you do that? You're not going to Expo. I know we met at Fancy Food.
Mm-hmm. So it's a combination of going to farmers markets.
Right.
And, you know, Range Me is a great resource for retailers and distributors and brands to kind of
Range
connect.
Me, if you are a brand and you are not on there, apparently it's great. I haven't had anyone particularly reach out because I'm on Range Me, but I do hear really good things. So that's my, I'm not plugging it because I haven't actually experienced any success with it, but I do think that people see you when you're on there.
Yeah. So
it's and just, Grace does,
yes,
which
I
is
do.
Important.
I'm looking.
Okay.
And there are also specific retailers that I can think of that are kind of in that innovation space, and so you could kind of just, you know, stroll through there and take a peek. So word of mouth is also a great way. I feel like there's a really strong supplier
we like
community.
To support each other,
which is great, and I think if something works and a supplier can kind of share that information with other suppliers,
and then once they, so for us, for example, we have a regional distributor, and so we have an exclusive arrangement with them. So we can't be using UNFI Next or UNFI for the majority of this region. But because we're launching in Chicago, we are using UNFI Next. And so basically, just so everyone understands the way it goes, is that we signed on, or, you know, we got a commitment from Peapod in Chicago. And because they want the product, I called Grace. We set up our paperwork. And now Grace, not you personally, but UNFI will be picking up from our warehouse and bringing our product to Racine, Wisconsin, which is the distribution center that distributes to the Peapod in Chicago. So presumably then we would like to open more doors in the Chicago area. Do you then help us figure out who those doors may be and how we could potentially get to those buyers?
Yeah. So, you know, we are not a DSD distributor.
Right.
So, you know, DSD distributors are kind of more on the sales end and can, you know, offer kind of some merchandising. We offer our brands exposure.
Right.
While you're active in this DC, any customer that pulls from that distribution center, Racine, can now see your products.
Right.
And for them to turn it on, they could order today. They could be ordering right now.
It takes a second. Yay.
So, you know, we give you exposure, and then there's opportunities. We're a company that's been around for 40 years. And having kind of that experience in this industry, we've created really strong relationships with our retailers. So we have a sales team that you should think of as your logistical allies.
Right.
They know their accounts like the back of their hand, and they know where there's opportunities in those stores for, you know, potentially your brand. So, you know, you have access to them.
Right.
And there's opportunities to get in front of them, and there's opportunities to get in front of the customer.
It's very cool. So if we see other brands that pull from Racine, I mean, other stores that pull from Racine, basically we can reach out to you guys and say, can you help us get these guys interested somehow?
Yeah. And I mean, it depends on the retailer. Retailer may be almost self-sufficient in that all you need to do is give them this code.
Yeah.
Like, here we go. Type it in.
Yeah. No, it's great. So what is the onboarding system like? We just did that, but can you walk us through it a little bit? Because I think figuring out pricing for a lot of small brands is really important. You know, the way that we backed into it, well, we've backed into it a few different times, which is Grace is like, can you just settle on your price? But basically, you know, as a brand, you don't get to decide. You would like to, but you don't get to decide what you're on the shelf at.
Right.
You don't. You can try to set your price to the distributor so that basically the distributor then can sell it to the retailer, and then the retailer then sells it to the consumer. And you can assume that the retailer takes 35 to 40% margin. The distributor to the retailer is...
That's going to depend. So how it works in our system with pricing is you submit, and you have submitted
right.
one price to yep. us. And so that is your price. We tack on the freight cost of us
right.
picking up the products. And now that's your landed cost in our system. We come up with a published wholesale price. So this is a price that a retailer who signs on with Unify tomorrow is going to pay. They don't have any historical business with us.
Right.
That's really our operation margin.
Got it.
And that's what they're paying for your price. And you have visibility into that.
Right.
And you'll have visibility into your published wholesale price
right.
and your published SRP. So just our suggestion to retailers based on a high Unify margin and based on a high retailer margin.
Right.
A lot of our customers, the majority of our customers, have their own pricing with Unify.
Got it. Interesting. Yeah.
So you should be assured by the fact that no customer is going to be paying more than the price that you see.
Right.
But there are going to be a lot of customers that are paying less.
Oh, that's so good to know. That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. And then can we talk a little bit about, I want to go back a little bit because I want to get into like off invoice and all that juicy stuff, but I also want to know what, because I think other founders out there, like what stands out to you? What are you looking at? Are you looking at the white space in the grocery store? Are you looking at categories that haven't been innovated for a while? Are you looking if it's a beautiful package, but it's a crowded category, that's okay. Like, do you have, I know it depends
yeah.
and I know there's no perfect formula, but what would you say, let's put it in two ways. What would you say is like a, ooh, and what would you say is like a, oh, not another?
Yeah. The, ugh, not another are just, you know, don't be a copycat.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's my number one advice for a brand.
Yeah.
It's just, and that shouldn't deter you if you really feel like you have a better version of something that's already out there.
But it has to really be better.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. I feel like I hear two different kind of stories when I talk to my brands about how they started. It was either, you know, we had this great product and we kept making it, and then just there was all this demand.
Yep. People really wanted it.
Or you were a consumer and you went into a store and you couldn't find what you were looking for.
Right.
And you kind of made it yourself.
Yep.
And lo and behold, there are a bunch of other consumers out there too that
yep.
were looking for that product. So I feel like on that second one, you ended up being pretty authentic and kind of disrupting your category without even knowing
right.
it.
Yes.
So you're standing out already.
Yep.
By doing that. And in terms of packaging, it's hard.
Right.
I feel like you have to kind of go into whatever section of the store you are
yeah.
and kind of see like how your brand would
yeah.
look like in there and think as a consumer, would this catch my eye? And then don't go overboard.
Yeah.
Really don't.
I do think it's hard. I mean, for years, you know, we sell granola at mm-hmm. Haven's Kitchen, and it's really good granola. There is no question. It's great granola. Part of the reason why it's great is because we make it and you eat it within 2 weeks, right? I mean, it's just, it sells out and we keep making it. And for years, people have been like, I wish you sold this. You know, I wish they should take this to Whole Foods. They should take this. And I mean, fortunately, I didn't even understand category or understand the whole system. But I knew enough to know that this was going to be too hard of a slog
yeah.
to make a product that that looks and feels and tastes pretty much like a lot of other things already, even if it's very special and even if the people that love Haven's Kitchen want it. And I think, unfortunately, and I don't mean to deter anyone from doing it, but it's a hard thing to do. So it is worth going to the grocery store and saying to yourself, which I didn't do, to be fair. Like, I kind of was like, we'll figure it out. Where is this going next to? What is this category? Who do I compare myself to? how many of these things sell? Like, just trying to figure out what else is out there and kind of like who you're up against in a way. And I guess what you're saying is, if you don't have a very clear answer to that, take a step back.
No, and you should be understandable too for the consumer. I think that's something, a shoppable grocery store is kind of divided based on primary application.
What do you mean by that? That sounds cool.
Yeah, primary application is that if I'm a consumer and I've gone into to make cookies, mm-hmm. I should be able to look up and category should say baking, and I should go over there
yeah.
and I should be able to find everything baking.
Yep.
And so if you're in a category disruptor, mm-hmm. You need to kind of understand that category, and it's kind of tough if you don't really fit in.
Yeah. Well, we are a classic example of that, because you look in sauce and we're not there because they're shelf stable and we're refrigerated.
Yeah. I think that's so exciting.
It is exciting, and there will be a category, like there'll be a set of all, you know, we like to call it like meal helpers mm-hmm. or, you know, quick dinners or, you know, it's going to be refrigerated condiments. There will be that set. Right now we're either like in hummus or like next to Jell-O or like a lot of places we're next to Veganese, but I mean that primary application thing is a little tough for us.
I will say that it's more for shelf stable items.
Right.
I think when you get into categories really chill,
yeah,
like you are, and less of frozen, that it kind of gets a little wishy-washy
yeah.
almost.
And yeah. Good to hear. Yeah. Wishy-washy, I'll take. So let's say that you've onboarded and you have a product and they're doing okay. You know, they're selling, they're opening a few doors here and there. How would you help them do better? What can they expect from you? Can you talk a little bit about promotions? Mm-hmm. I know that at least when we were starting, we're like, we won't need demos because everyone's just going to know us from the internet and everyone's going to love us. And we don't need to do promotions because then people will expect to find us on promotion. And then when we're not on promotion, they won't buy us. And we were dead wrong about both. Like full on just wrong. Like, yes, you need to do a lot of demos. And if you're not budgeting for a lot of demos, budget now for a lot of demos, and definitely do promotions with your distributor, but also with the stores. So can you explain promotions?
Yeah. And I think it even goes back to what you're talking about when, you know, dealing with pricing and making sure regardless of what price you come in, that you have room to promote.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if, you know, you've come down at the lowest price possible. Retailers yep. want to see it, and distributors want to see it, and, yep. and consumers want to see it.
So bake it in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Always bake it in.
That depends on your category, right? Because I always say like 20% trade spend, but I know that there are categories that do 30, and I know there are some categories that do under 15, right?
So, you know,
so average at 20.
Research it and you know, figure out kind of what makes sense.
But, and like all other budgets, assume you're going to spend more. Like we always assume we're going to sell more but spend less, and it's always the opposite, as gangbusters as you might be. You know, it's just kind of funny. Okay, so back to a promo. So how does it work exactly?
Yeah, so there are two kind of promotions that you can set up in the top level, really. There are many promotions. Off-invoice deals are ones that are specifically with your retail, with your distributor.
Those are called OIs.
Yes, OIs. And those come off of your purchase order. They're for a very set period of time. Your distributor, UNFI, wants to see quarterly promos.
Quarterly. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And retailers also want to see that, especially kind of when you're looking at larger chain stores. There's going to be some ask, and they've already figured out on their end what it takes to eventually stay in their stores. So they may say also quarterly promos.
Mm-hmm.
This is my advice for brands out there that are setting this up, set them up at the same time.
From the retailer and the distributor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Make sure you're doing that in the same month from, you know, it's easy to manage on your end. And from a cost perspective, what you're now doing is you're taking an off invoice deal on the front end when we're making that purchase order. And then on the back end, then when you're seeing a charge back, because that's how these retailer specific promos are being charged back right. to you, the vendor, the supplier. It's a less amount.
So right.
kind of, you know,
that makes sense.
Spreading it out.
So what has, like, what are the big mistakes that you've seen that brands do when they're my size? Like under $1 million in sales, opening new regions, starting to get some traction. What would you say, like, Allie, please don't do that?
Yeah, it depends. Mm-hmm. this is an area of gray. I think distribution is a big area of gray. But I'd say broadly speaking, don't spread yourself too thin. Yeah. Don't, and be very strategic with your distributor and your retail partners. Make sure you understand your target consumer. Make sure you understand where they're shopping. And make sure if you're presented with an opportunity to go down a path that you didn't necessarily think. So when a retailer approaches you and says, hey, Allie, like, well, you know, we think you're great. Like, come on board. Mm-hmm. Just make sure you understand what the ask is there.
What you're doing. Yeah. Right. I think it's really challenging because, you know, I talk about this a lot on the show, but I think part of the problem with the venture model being applied to food in the last couple of years is they want you to have this exponential growth. And the flip side is that A, it's not really sustainable, but B, food doesn't really work exponentially. Yeah. You know, it's really like a player on the ground game, you know, and it is slow and steady win the race, and you can open doors and open DCs, but I can't imagine anything more depressing than getting kicked out of a store because you're not selling enough, or getting kicked out of a DC because you don't have the movement. Like, that's awful. Like, that's just awful to think about.
Yeah, it's awful, but it's not the end of the world.
No.
And you know, you come back when you're in a place to support that.
What do you think we should have totally locked up before we go to a new region?
I think you need to, whatever retailers you're in, you need to make sure, one, you need to physically be in these stores. I can't stress that enough.
Yeah, how go important to the it stores. Is
to go to the stores. And you need to make sure that you've, you know, come up with a plan to, you know, still support and the retailers that you have in that region, mm-hmm. but also, you know, be able to grow. So from like an internal sales perspective, mm-hmm. just make sure and doesn't necessarily mean, you know, hiring 10 different people.
It right.
Just, you know, I might have to delegate it a little bit different than right. you originally thought.
Yeah. How do you think we can best communicate with our distributors? Because you have so many brands. I'm sure everyone thinks that they're your most special brand. But what is kind of the best, you know, what makes us stick? Like, what makes you particularly like working with a brand?
When a brand is very communicative, it's great. I try and set up kind of regular touch bases with all of my brands, mm-hmm. just as check-ins. But I think there are things that sometimes brands think may not necessarily be relevant to their distributor. So, you know, why don't we, and maybe we should think this, let me change my UPCs and mm-hmm. let me just ship that off to my distributor. And it's happened.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. So
over communicate.
Yeah, yeah. Over communicate. Because there's a lot of nuances I find in this system. You know, you're adding in someone new, basically. Mm-hmm. Us, we're kind of the middleman. And there's a lot in there. Just communicate. And, you know, it could be as simple as, you know, it's fine. Like, go ahead and do that.
Right.
Or, wow.
Wait, that's a big change.
That's a lot of consequences. Yeah. And I'm more than happy to sit down and walk through that. But
right.
nothing's worse than kind of making a decision without kind of having some, you know, background. Right.
So there are a lot of times, so it's funny because I hired two people who used to work at Fresh Direct, and both of them constantly say, like, oh, when we were merchants at Fresh Direct, we wish we would have known how hard it was for a brand to actually get the thing on the shelf. Yeah. They want to actually like have a party for all the brands that they like tortured, essentially, which I think is a great idea. So what would you as a distributor want to tell either vendor like me or buyer like customer, like, this is actually hard for us people, give us a little bit of slack? Like, is there anything that you wish that we knew, like, that we don't know, that you would like to just tell all of us now?
Yeah. UNFI is a very big company.
Yeah, they're like 10,000 employees, yes, right?
And we have a lot of different departments that we have to communicate things like changes to, and distribution kind of moves slowly.
Right.
And I find especially kind of when you're an emerging brand and you, I don't know, do you have 10,000 employees maybe?
Definitely not, no.
Right. So things may move a little quicker because right. of the fact that the team is right there.
Right.
And it's just not the case with distribution. Right. There's a lot of things that need to be communicated out and managed. So just
give you time, be a little patient.
Time. And yeah. Communication can fix all of yeah. those.
Well, it's nice because you write back.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, that's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's important, and communication goes both ways.
Yes, for sure. Any big shifts in, like, the industry or products or the grocery store, anything that you're seeing that's just been interesting from, like, a 30,000 feet in the air perspective?
Yeah, I like data.
Yeah, and I like data, too.
Data is great, and kind of being at UNFI,
you get data.
Access to data.
Yeah.
and we have a team called Category Management, which mm-hmm. is basically the intellectual branch of our organization.
Yes.
They're very smart.
Yeah, very cool.
Very smart. So being able to tap into that knowledge is cool. So from that outside perspective of trends and things, mm-hmm. like keto all
keto,
day long.
Yeah.
Yeah. MCTs and, wow. and CBDs and... keto was something that I was personally excited about because I love fat. Mm-hmm. I think fat is a great thing.
I like fat too.
Yeah. So to see something like that on the rise has been great. And it's cool too, because you see trends that are basically kind of long lasting almost. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think I've heard you speak a little bit more about like trends versus fads. And,
yes.
And how important it is to kind of be trendy. And
not fatty,
fatty mm-hmm. but fatty.
But fatty.
fatty.
With a T.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. You there. Yeah. I mean, there's like a secular shift, and then there's, you know, like a, this is hot right now. So put it on your label and smack it on, which I would advise against. But again, I'm an older woman with more sort of like, I think just different. I just grew up in a different era where, you know, things were just built differently and, you know, you tried not to be trendy or fatty.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we're talking about kind of millennials being more interested in being a consumer that goes to a grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
I do think there is like going back towards that
yep.
of wanting something sustainable.
Yeah.
So
I think so too.
The buzzwords are awesome to have, but be strategic about it and be true to your brand and yep. be true to yourself when you're kind of think about it. And I'm sure brands out there, and you know, stewardships are expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And organic certification, gluten-free, yep. non-GMO project verified. You have to be really, really strategic
yep.
About kind of making those decisions
yeah.
in packaging.
And I mean, they could take up the whole front of the label. Okay. We have so many more questions I could ask, but we're running out of time. So I always ask this question at the end. It doesn't have to be professional, although it usually is. But in your career, what is kind of a time or a day or an event which is just the most fun you've had doing this job? Like, what was a moment where you're like, ah, I yeah. feel like Elle Woods.
I have a kid in the candy store, Expo East. So, you know, there's two large
yes.
all-natural product expos, East and West. And I went in September. And it was around the time of Hurricane Florence.
Yes.
And so it was like, oh, is this event even going to really
right.
happen?
And,
you know, I ended up canceling my hotel room. And last minute for one of the days, I was like, all right, I'm going to do Accelerated Expo East. And, like, got on the train from New York to Baltimore and basically did Expo East.
In a day.
In a day.
Wow.
And I remember, and I had so much fun. Like,
right.
It was just me, like, you know, tossing business cards and taking samples and like talking about
right.
UNFI Next and, you know, stopping by my favorite brands and grabbing
right.
something. And I remember having this moment in the cab back to the train. I looked down and I have just two giant bags
of stuff.
And
yeah.
I, like, I just remember laughing with myself at myself
right.
at just how like overboard I had gone with like this whole thing.
No, but that's fun. I mean, fun. If you love it, I can't imagine a more fun job. And I want to personally just thank you because it's been amazing working with you so far. and you're helping us get another region, which is wonderful, and really figuring it out with us. And we all really appreciate it, my whole team. Right. So thank you.
Yeah, of course. It's been a pleasure working with you guys. Yeah. And I'm excited to be a part of this journey.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for coming on the program. I'm having a feeling that you'll come back on another time because there are going to be more questions. But it's been great. Thank you so much, Grace.
All right.
And Kevin, thank you for being the engineer today. I don't have 2 weeks. But then when I get back, I have John Lawson coming on, who is the head buyer, I guess, for the Northeast region. Yep. Along with a couple of other really fun founders that are coming on in the next couple of weeks, and a PR guru. And I think someone else awesome too. So I'll be back in 2 weeks, but thank you for listening, and everyone enjoy.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.